Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I'm Frank Benali.
This is Klaus Lundekvam.
I'm Matt Letitia.
Dean Hammond's here.
And you're listening to In That Number.
Here is Letitia.
James Beattie, oh, belter!
Mane for the hat-trick! That's an unbelievable hat-trick to Sadio Mane! Shane Long takes Southampton to Wembley! Graziano Pelle with a left-foot strike!
Ball pass, lifts it, and he's got it in as well! And Danny Ings has done it again!
Thanks for checking out In That Number with me, Kevin, the Moscow and Mush Militant. Find me on Twitter, at Moscow
and
Mush.
And me, Ray Hunt. You can find me on at RayHunt84.
Follow the show on at Number Podcast on Twitter.
And on Facebook, Instagram and Telegram on In That Number Podcast.
Email us with your thoughts and feelings on inthatnumberpodcast@gmail.com.
And if you like what you hear, consider sharing your support by visiting buymeacoffee.com/inthatnumber.
Let's march on in.
Welcome back to In That Number. This is episode 198. Proud to be a part of the Sports Social Network. Today is the fifth instalment of the Fancast series, and we welcome Scott Gorman, another US-based fan from our Discord. Actually, I should say welcome back to Scott, because he was on about a year ago. So, yes, it's a pleasure to have you back on again, Scott.
The pleasure is all mine, Ray.
Definitely ours. I mean, it went so well last time that we had to have you back on at some point.
I would hope that the listeners feel that way.
Do you remember the last time?
Oh, very well. I enjoyed it a great deal.
That is good. Can I just ask you, I just want a reminder, sure, how you became a Saints fan.
I became a Saints fan because a good friend of mine, knowing my love for New Orleans and, of course, the American football team, I say, of course, like I expect everyone in England to know this, but the
Saints,
American
yeah.
football team, yes, is the Saints. So among other reasons, he told me that he had a team for me in the English Premier League, and I really hadn't watched club football ever. But after that, I figured, I'll take a flyer on this and see how it is. And it so happened to be really at the what later turned out to be kind of the high water mark of the 2000s anyway for Southampton. And it was just so enjoyable to watch that how could I not be enamored with the team? It was, you know, under Koeman, we had a Portuguese captain, which appealed to me because my wife is Portuguese.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah,
so it seemed like a perfect fit for me. I'm thinking that I'm following Tim from, who's a fan of Philadelphia teams, and they tend to be the polar opposite of the teams that I follow.
Same
I
think
it just it just goes to show how lovable Southampton was at that time, that regardless where you were from in the States, that seemed like the team for you. I mean, unless you were a blatant front runner.
Yeah, I wonder if how many of you would have been, if you were just getting into the Premier League now, how many of you would have chose Saints on their current form. Probably not many of them.
Yeah, I'd like to think otherwise, because I tend to root for the underdogs. Although if I'd come to the party this year, yeah, there wasn't a whole lot to be in love with, other than, I will say, the great humor of the fans during the Nathan Jones era. I remember watching matches and thinking and hearing the crowd. It was actually the first time, I think, that I could really understand what the crowd was singing. And listening to that, I was just cracking up, thinking I definitely found the right team here.
Okay, well, before we head on further with the show, I'd just like to add that if you are enjoying it, then please show your support and head to buymeacoffee.com/innatnumber. Buy us a coffee. It'll be really, really appreciated. Anyway, let's get cracking with some ITN news then. The first thing that I want to bring up is Martin Semmen's replacement. It's been named Phil Parsons, who will take over from the start of July and head all aspects of strategy and operations, working closely with Sport Republic, obviously. I don't know anything about the guy, Scott. I really don't, other than that he spent the last 15 years at Dyson. So he's got all the right credentials.
Yeah, and I think I'm pleased with the move, because I have a Dyson vacuum cleaner and it's worked very well. So I think blue skies are ahead.
Yeah, okay, well, that's good. We look at it like that. I mean, I think it was Tim actually said on the Discord that Saints are sucking at the moment, so the Dyson would be pretty good. So I quite like that. But yeah, I mean, I know nothing about him, so At least the wheels are in motion. We've got the parts in place now, and we can just concentrate on moving forward with this season.
Nice to finally have those positions filled.
Exactly, yes. And they've also announced the Russell Martin's new backroom staff as well. He's going to be joined by Matt Gill, who's going to be the assistant manager. We've got Dean Thornton as the goalkeeping coach. Rhys Owens will be the sports science, and Ben Parker would be on tactics and insights analysis. That'd be a big one. Tactics there, Ben Parker. You've got your work cut out for you there. Again, I mean, these are all his backroom staff at Swansea. He knows what he likes. He knows who he wants to work with. And it's worked fairly well. So hopefully that can resonate with Saints as well.
And we can have some accountability, which would be nice.
Yeah, and if we can just keep it there, just don't fiddle around with it too much, then... Yeah, some stability and consistency.
I'm all for that.
Pre-season, we've got two more games that have been added to the list, because we travelled to Göztepe, which in Turkey, on Saturday the 15th of July, and they announced in the week that we got Reading away on Saturday the 22nd, a Ruben Sayas-led Reading, and those tickets are on general sale now. And then Bournemouth at home on Tuesday, the 25th of July. Interesting. Get Bournemouth and we get Ruben Sayas.
Yes. And for whom will Jack Stevens be playing?
Wow. I mean, I did see him arriving at Staplewood with a big smile on his face. I don't know if you've seen any of the social media that Saints have put out today, but there's a lot of players that have all arrived back at Staplewood. And James Ward-Prowse was there, and Nathan Teller. And Jack Stevens, all back with smiles on their faces. So can we read too much into that?
I feel like it has to be a very odd time to be at Staplewood, because I would feel as though half of these players are not going to be there within a relatively short period of time. But I'm not really certain which half.
Yeah, and I can't make my mind up whether they're trying too hard to look happy. So I don't know if the smile was a fake just to appease the fans. But I mean, I don't know.
Has Nathan Teller ever not looked happy?
That's a good point. Yeah, he's always got a big smile on his face, hasn't he? So some transfer news then. Stuff that's been going around for the last couple of days, which doesn't sit very well with me, is the Tino Livramento news. I'm sure you've seen it, and the move to Newcastle. And there's reports saying that talks are concrete, And then they were saying about 15 million and trying to send Ryan Fraser our way as part of the deal. I've heard Saints want 25 to 30 million for him, or otherwise that, you know, he's going nowhere.
I don't really know. I feel as though this is what happens when your team gets relegated, that it's hard for the team to say no to a huge offer. And when you have somebody like Tino, sure, I'd love to have Tino just mopping up on the championship competition, but I think we all know, and Newcastle knows, and everybody else knows, Tino is a Premier League player. And whether he is a player who belongs in the starting 11 for one of the big six teams, I think is debatable. So if an offer comes along, unfortunately, those players that you really want to have to gain promotion are the players who are also going to fetch a huge sum. And so I don't think that Southampton is in a position to say that anybody is off limits, as much as it pains me to say that, because I've been so excited to see Tino come back.
Yeah, he looks happy. I mean, there's rumors around as well saying that he is happy here. So I don't think they're not pushing it. He's not pushing it his end, let's say, because I mean, there's a lot of players that would have just down tools and been like, yeah, I want that move to a Champions League side. And I mean, we've seen that before with Adam Lallana, with Dejan Lovren, with Virgil van Dijk. As soon as that side comes in or shows a little bit of interest, and they're down in tools and they're off. But you know, it's nice to see that Tino has said that he's happy here. I mean, I'd like to think that he'd stay another year, give it another go in the championship, because he knows he's going to get regular game time. And, you know, we've dropped down a league, so the standard is not going to be as high as it was in the Premier League. He's just coming back from injury. And there's always January as well. I mean, if things aren't going so well, then maybe we could, maybe he could push a move back then. But I don't know. Maybe I'm being too hopeful. If there was a gun to my head, I would say now that he stays.
From your lips to God's ears, I'd love to see that.
I have been known to be wrong, so I'm just throwing some doubt on it now. But yeah, it would be nice to keep him, obviously.
You're saying that now. When I saw we've all seen the rumors with James Ward-Prowse, and I'm resigned to the idea that he's going to be leaving. And from a fan perspective, I don't care where he goes, frankly. It's just going to be painful to watch him wearing another kit. But of all the clubs where our players could go, Newcastle, really, that's to watch in Newcastle, who's essentially become the team that I was hoping that Southampton could be years ago, minus the questionable source of funds. It's pretty painful.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I would much rather he went to Newcastle. He's got more of a chance of winning anything than going to a team like Fulham. I just don't want him to. I want him to succeed. I want him to get somewhere. And you know, he's got Champions League football if he went to somewhere like Newcastle. But yeah, I don't know. West Ham as well. If James Ward-Prowse ended up there, then that would be fine.
I mean, as fine as anything could be, I guess.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough to watch.
It's going to be a painful summer, isn't it? We're going to see a lot of a transitional period. It's going to be difficult to take. We have seen Nico Lawrence. He's joined League Two's Colchester United for the remainder of the season. And Mislav Orsic is set to join Turkish side Trabzonspor for 3.5 million. Not quite what we paid, but he's got to go, hasn't he, Orsic? He was never settled here, and 6 minutes playing time, or just under 6 minutes, yeah, he's had. So, yeah, you got to take it on the chin there.
However will we fill that void?
There's been another player that's talked about coming, and we've obviously talked about Matt Grimes before. But there's a West Ham midfielder, Flynn Downes, could be on the cards, because, I mean, he spent last season on loan at Swansea. He's got a great relationship with Russell Martin. So, you know, that could be another potential replacement for James Ward-Prowse. Do you know anything about Flynn Downes?
Nothing beyond what you just mentioned.
Okay. Yeah, no. There is a good bit of news coming out from this week. I mean, it was out on Tuesday. Don Ballard signed a new deal, keeping him here until 2026. Now, this is fantastic, Scott, because There was talk about him moving on, and that didn't sit well with me, because this club used to have a reputation for developing young talent. But I mean, if we continue to not give them the playing time, and now that we're dropping down a league, these players are going to want to leave. I mean, we've seen that with a number of them already. And in my opinion, Don Ballard is the best of the young crop right now. And I think that it was vital that we kept him. And with that, hopefully there's something, you know, he was happy to sign this deal with the promise of more game time this season.
Yeah, I was thrilled to see that, especially, I mean, Southampton's identity was bringing up the young players, and he appears to be probably the closest of all of the young players. And so it would have been a shame to see him go. He was one of that was one of my first thoughts when relegation became a reality, was, are we going to lose someone like Don Ballard? Are they going, are other clubs paying attention and willing to take a chance on him? So I'm really happy to see him sticking around.
Yeah, that's massive. It's a really, really good bit of news, that, because, I mean, I knew nothing of a deal in place. I didn't know. And then I just see the pictures of him with his shirt, and I thought, wow, that's a relief. We can all breathe a bit. But, I mean, as I say, from Saturday onwards, I mean, the wheels are in motion now. It's moving day, isn't it? 1st of July. The next couple of weeks could be painful, as I say, a real transitional period for the club. And I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. But, you know, we just got to keep the faith, because players are going to come and go, but we're still here. We're still fans, and we'll remain.
Yes, and I'm sure we'll get into this in a bit, but Rasmus, although he's whiffed on a few signings, I think that the hope when he came on board was that we were going to be able to build through young talent that they've scouted, and they want to build through them. We have to just hope that they can make more good decisions than poor ones. And there's going into this season, I think there's just going to be a lot of question marks throughout the pitch, and we have to hope that they make the right decisions to fill those voids.
Definitely don't need any more younger players. I think we need a little bit more of a balanced squad. But I think hopefully they've learned from their mistakes. And speaking of mistakes, during these fan casts that we've been doing, we've been asking the fans, you know, their opinion on the season in general, and how or why it went wrong. And it all started with the summer window, and then, you know, Ralph got sacked, and the replacement of Nathan Jones, and the sacking of Jones, the appointment of Ruben Sayers, then him staying on. Both transfer windows were, well, underwhelming, shall we say. But I want to start where we normally do, and that's with Ralph. I can't remember where you stood with it on the Discord, but I mean, say he lost his job on the 7th of November. Was that, in your opinion, was that too late, or maybe should we have kept him on a little bit longer, or maybe you think he should still be here?
I would say at the very least we should have kept him on longer. Ooh. We can only speculate what would have happened after that, but I thought that the decisions with respect to Ralph were just abysmal. If
this is Sport Republic's decisions, yeah.
Yes. Everything from the timing to the decisions themselves. We all saw how horrible the end of the 21-22 campaign was. And although I was not for sacking Ralph at the time, I could understand why that decision would have been made during the summer. But it wasn't. And obviously, this is something that they had to consider. There was, I believe, a difference of opinion as to whether Ralph should remain on.
So we're led to believe, Martin Semmons wanted him, and he fought for him.
But a decision was made to keep him on. So if you thought during the summer window that the best manager for the club was Ralph, then I don't see what took place during those first 14 matches that would have changed my opinion. I certainly think that they should have had enough courage in their conviction to keep him on through what was going to be a rather soft part of the schedule that was coming up. The thing about Ralph is, I've always felt that Ralph was a victim of his own success. Ralph would have runs of, you know, a month and a half where he'd have great results, and then the fans would get spoiled and think that this should just carry on for the next few months. And then when the team did poorly, we would blame Ralph. And we wouldn't look at it always on balance. But that's what fans do. You know, they react based on what just took place 20 minutes ago. But I always felt – and the other thing about Ralph that would drive people nuts is that his teams would always jump out in front. We'd have that high press. Yeah. We'd go up 1-0, and then we'd inevitably see the stat about points dropped from winning positions, which I just always drove me nuts. That I heard fans say things like, I just want consistency. I just, you know, oh, we'll never do it until we learn how to stop dropping points from winning positions. Well, you got that this season. You got consistency. They stunk week after week. And you didn't have to worry. I mean, Nathan Jones, if that's what you wanted, boy, Nathan Jones was great because never had to worry about dropping points from winning positions because we were losing by halftime in all of our matches.
Well, the Wolves won.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was.
That was a
yeah. Yeah. Congratulations for
yeah,
for
one up us and
back to the glory days.
11 against 10, and he still managed to fuck it up. But yeah.
Yeah, give him credit. That was it was difficult to fathom because we looked better 11-on-11.
Yeah.
At the beginning of that match, just looked fantastic. And but as he pointed out later, it was probably to our detriment that they that Wolves had to play with 10 men because we were wholly unprepared for that.
Yeah, we didn't know how to do that apparently, but yeah.
Yeah.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
But yeah, back to Ralph.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
My fear going into the season was we're going to stick with Ralph, and then we're going to get some poor results right out of the gate, and then we're going to be stuck having to replace him in the middle of a season. And to my surprise, we actually started off really well. And then I think looking back on it now, we know now, and frankly, we should have known then, Lavia was a huge part of the team. And he looked fantastic from the moment he stepped on the pitch. And we got kind of the high water mark for the season was that win over Chelsea. But he got injured. And right about the same time, we let Romeu go back to Spain. And look, mm-hmm. I love Romeu. He was probably my favorite player. Not probably. He was my favorite player, but we had to let him go. He's been a great – he was a great ambassador, a great soldier for the club. He wanted to go back to Spain. You had to let him go back to Spain. But it left the team weakened. And no, it should come, therefore, as no surprise that after Lavia's injury and Romeu's departure – the team just stopped winning. And I felt like there were all these. So before that, those injuries, we're looking at, or before those departures, Ralph would get 7 points in five matches and we're really happy. And then after that, he manages 5 points in the next nine. And I think I felt as though if all you were looking at was results, then yeah, you could see where we would need a new manager because we have to change something up. But it's sort of like if my car stops running because the engine failed, I'm not going to go and replace the tires. And if you were watching these matches,
it's a very good point.
You knew going back to when Danny Ings left. When Danny Ings left, we replaced him with Adam Armstrong. And we knew from that point on, anybody watching the matches knew we just don't have a clinical scorer. We get opportunities and we have – love Shea Adams, but he's not a clinical scorer. And I looked at the team and I said, geez, if we had gone into the season without a goalkeeper and our best goalkeeping option was Shea Adams, and we were losing matches by a goal every week because he was allowing a soft goal, we wouldn't blame Shea Adams. We would blame management for not bringing a goalkeeper in during the window when it was clear that we needed one.
That's another very good point, yeah.
That was the problem we had. If you watch these matches, you knew that, God, Shea Adams missed against Wolves. I mean, he had to score from 2 feet from the net. But all he had to do was let the ball hit a part of his body other than his arm, and he messed that up. I'm thinking
– I shouldn't laugh, but yeah, it's –
It was comical. If you weren't pulling for the team and knowing this could be calamitous, it was funny. Adam Armstrong breaks in all alone against Man U and gets stopped. We're level, and Shea Adams breaks in on Jordan Pickford, gets stopped. Everton comes down the other end and scores, so we go from potentially gaining 3 points to losing 3 points. It was match after match where we were missing out on points because of the very issue that wasn't just apparent during the summer transfer window. It was apparent about 4 matches into the Adam Armstrong era that we need a striker. And so to me, that was the kind of original sin of the 2022-23 Southampton season, was we went into the season having not filled what was the most glaring problem with the roster. And what drives me absolutely berserk about it is, for a change, we actually had money to throw around at the problem. And I don't necessarily blame them for bringing in the young players that they did, many of whom have shown promise. The problem was they put all their eggs in the Cody Gakpo basket. And when he pulled out at the 11th hour and said, "Nah, I think I'm going to stay where I am," we had no plan B. And there was no reason not to have a plan B because we had money to sign a plan B, which we know because, A, they spent lots of money during that transfer window, and then, B, they threw money around like crazy in January. So there's no reason why we shouldn't have had a backup plan. Then, having been left exposed like that, when Ralph manages 12 points in 14 matches – we let him go, and I said at the time, if we are lucky, we will get a good manager and we will have the exact same problem. More likely, we will do worse because the manager was never the problem with this team. I mean, let's not forget, when he had Shea Adams and a clinical striker, they were knocking on the door of European competition. In fact, they would have competed in Europe if Ings could stay healthy.
Yeah, we had our moments. But, I mean, I'm convinced that during that season, that Sport Republic must have said, look, because the way they ended 21-22, Ralph's record there was just awful. And I'm convinced that they were looking for options at new managers then, and they'd done their homework, and Nathan Jones was on the cards from then. I'm pretty sure of it. And obviously Martin Semmons had fought for Ralph. Maybe there was a deal that they said, look, let's just see how the start of the season goes. And as soon as it started to go wrong, they pulled the plug on it and Nathan Jones was in straight away. Well, I guess they have admitted defeat by sacking him. But when he came in, how underwhelmed were you with the replace with Ralph being here for so long, building a connection with the fans? I mean, even people that wanted him out, it's hard to dislike the guy. But then you get Nathan Jones that comes in, a complete opposite. Yeah, it was a very underwhelming appointment and replacement for Ralph Hasenhüttl.
I will say that I think that fans – well, first of all, since I got into English football, I was always amazed at how quickly fans turn on a new manager. And yet I watched Nathan Jones in about 4 matches – and was like, what are we waiting for? We know how this story is going to end. Could we end it sooner rather than later, please? Because we have favorable fixtures coming up and absolutely no hope that we're going to get results in them. And I think that one thing that I find, I think fans overreact to the post-game press conferences. And because when your team loses, there's really no right answer. What are you going to say? I mean, you could throw players under the bus. You could you could be like Sayas and kind of whistle a happy tune and try to send a message of positivity. You could do any number of things, and they're kind of all different degrees of wrong. Nathan Jones was as far to one end of the spectrum as he could possibly be. I mean, he was just abysmal in that no matter how bad things went, he seemed to be defensive when nobody was really attacking him. I mean, he was like –
yeah, he was a bit crazy for a while.
He was nuts. And I'm looking at this three, four matches in, and I'm saying, can we pull the plug on this already? Show me any – you know, under Ralph, what I loved about this club was there was always optimism. Like, they could be going up against – it didn't matter. Arsenal, Mets. I mean, look at Arsenal this season. As horrible as Southampton looked at the beginning of the season – yeah, we're apparently in free fall. And not only did we earn a draw with Arsenal, we played them toe to toe. I mean, it wasn't like we got a lucky goal and somehow, you know, made that stand up for a point. There was always hope that out of nowhere that could happen. Because, by the way, I mean, another reason why I was so big on Ralph being the man for the job is for as frustrating as it was to watch the team go horribly wrong for weeks and months on end, he managed to pull the team out of tailspins when I didn't think it was possible. And that's what we needed, was somebody who could pull the team out of a tailspin. Nathan Jones was the complete opposite of that. And after four matches, I'm saying, what is this team doing well? Like, what can you possibly point to and say, this team is improving, or there's at least signs that we see what Nathan Jones is trying to build here? There was nothing. I mean, how Man City happened, I will probably never understand. It was probably more a feeling on the part of Man City that we're playing a team who was fortunate to get by Sheffield Wednesday. We probably don't need to come in with the, you know, right attitude, and somehow they got blanked. But apart from that, there was no cause for optimism at any point, except maybe when we're up 1-0 and we go and Wolverhampton goes down a man. That was probably the only time when I felt really optimistic, other than the final whistle with Man City.
Yeah, and that was his the final nail in the coffin. But you mentioned that, like, four games or so that you realised that, when are they going to pull the plug on this? And his first four games, it was a 3-1 loss to Liverpool, which, I mean, that was before the World Cup break, and, you know, it was Liverpool. That was fine. Then he went and lost 3-1 to Brighton at home.
After he put the break in World Cup break.
Yes, he certainly did, yeah. yeah, that Brighton one on Boxing Day was... but, I mean, you look back at it and say, well, Brighton had a fantastic season. You know, they got into Europe for the first time in their history. So, again, you know, another team that we shouldn't have been beaten. And then the Fulham game. But the game that really did it for everybody, I think, was that Nottingham Forest one at home, because, yeah, that was terrible. And obviously Nottingham Forest were struggling at the time as well. They were in the relegation zone, as were we. So you knew it was a big six-pointer down there. If you don't have a shot on target, or even a shot against a team like Nottingham Forest, then you know that this, you know, it's all going wrong.
The Forest match was the one where I said, this, it's over. He has got to go. You cannot put up. I mean, the attack was just absolutely anemic against a team that was abysmal on the road. The XG was under 1.5. Like, how do you go into a game with a team like Forest and that's the strength of your attack? And one of the things that drove me nuts, again, it was like, are you watching these matches, Sport Republic? The Newcastle match, which was the last draw for Ralph, they managed to double up in XG, a team that is now going to be playing in the Champions League. And it was at that point that that management said, we've had enough. We have to bring in Nathan Jones. Mm. And then I watched Forrest. We got tripled up in XG against a team that had scored, what, one goal on the away, yeah. I think, all season?
That's right.
It was unbelievable. What are we waiting for at that point?
And even then, at that point, we had the fans for him as well, and they were still defending him. And it was what were they watching at that point?
Well, I watched that and I put it in the file of, well, what do you expect them to say? I mean, they're not going to say that we think our manager is a fool because he's still the manager.
No, I get that. But at that point, they really have to start listening to the fans. And why let it go on for another six games? That's beyond me. And, okay, obviously there was the win against Man City, as you mentioned, and the win against Blackpool, I believe, in the Cup, that was in there as well. But, I mean, yeah, you can't – if the fans are this animated about this manager, you're putting up results like that are far worse than what Ralph was doing. At what point do you need to just suck it up and just say, look, forget pride, we've made a mistake, we need to get rid of him now. Why let it continue?
And then, that's the point.
Obviously, the Wolves game was the final. I mean, it was quite bad at St Mary's there. The atmosphere was so bad. I don't ever remember it being that bad. You know, you got fans walking over with the P45 for Nathan Jones, and it was all, oh God, it was. I thought it was going to start getting ugly. Even the our fans were fighting each other around that time as well. It was just a horrible place to be. I mean, it didn't get much better, to be fair.
And the interesting thing is, looking back on that, we could say I felt like that Sport Republic bowed to the fans when they sacked Ralph, when they did, because again, if you were watching the match, it was a great microcosm of the season where Southampton actually played pretty well, actually very well, and yet the scoreline was terrible. They lost 4-1. Because I would say the other team have players who can finish. We do not. The other team has a Premier League goalkeeper. Bazuno is, yeah, maybe he is, maybe he isn't. He probably will be one day, but it's certainly not what you would call a strength of the team. So if you were actually and still amongst the fans, there were some like myself who still wanted to keep Ralph in. Who wanted Nathan Jones to be manager after 3-4 matches, particularly after the Forest match? That was it, I guess. And I felt like they were just slow to acknowledge the obvious, which is this person has no business managing a Premier League club. And his attitude coming out of these matches, just defending himself, just goes to show that, God, I mean – Bazunu will be a Premier League goalkeeper long before Nathan Jones is a Premier League manager.
That's quite a good bet, actually. Yeah. I mean, it still took too long for them to sack him. And again, you know, the whole Jesse Marsh situation as well. And then I've said it before on the show that they made a mistake with Nathan Jones. They sacked him. They were paying him off, the rest of his contracts, etc. And they didn't want to. I mean, they wouldn't even pay the. I can't even remember what the amount was that Jesse Marsh was asking for. They wouldn't pay him for the. They only wanted to pay him for the rest of the season, and Jesse Marsh said no to it. So, I'm convinced that they didn't want to make a mistake again with the manager. So they just took a cheap option and just got Ruben Sayers in for the time being. And then obviously they appointed him full time. But I got to say, I wasn't over the moon with the Jesse Marsh appointment. But if I'd have known what we were going to have for the rest of the season, then of course he was definitely the better option, a proven manager in the Premier League, unlike the two that we ended up with. And obviously looking back at it all on a whole, definitely keep Ralph. It was the only option, wasn't it? We had three managers. They all had a bad spell, but Ralph by far was the better. But the Jesse Marsh situation, how disappointed were you with that?
I was disappointed in the sense that I thought that Marsh to Southampton made sense for both sides. But it reminded me of what I saw with Jose Font, with Ings, with any number of situations where I feel like it would have made sense for them to be at Southampton, but they wanted to go elsewhere, and the result was poor for both. Font did actually win in France at some point, but I didn't think his time in West Ham really – I mean, if you look back on it, was he better off going to West Ham or
absolutely
staying at Southampton? Probably staying at Southampton. Mm. Yeah. Ings could have been playing in Europe with Southampton and instead decided to go in search of greener pastures. I thought that Jesse Marsh overplayed his hand. I don't see what made him such an amazing candidate, but I thought, yeah, this could work. It's definitely, if I'm Jesse Marsh, I'm saying, yeah, I'm getting back in the Premier League. I've got to show that I'm not the guy. I'm better than the manager who was just sacked.
But I mean, also, if you're looking at the managers that have been sacked at that season, I'm not including Jesse Marsh at Leeds, obviously, but you're looking at Frank Lampard and Steven Gerrard and all the people, all the managers that did go out. And all the replacements that come in, like Sam Allardyce and Sean Dyche, Jesse Marsh was definitely the better option there.
I guess so. I look back on it and I say, it didn't matter who you brought in at that point.
It mattered to Everton. I mean, they made the manager change straight away and it worked for them. I think they probably would have stayed up if they kept Frank Lampard anyway, because there was three worse teams than them.
I think Frank Lampard could torpedo any club. and I think Dyche only managed to keep Everton up because it was an unbelievably unusual season in terms of the number of points that were needed. I mean, Southampton was pretty much done at that point. And Lampard had so torpedoed Leicester that you only had one spot left. And Leeds managed to be worse than Everton. It's not as though Dyche came in and like suddenly they were up to 45 points. I mean, it took that goal.
That's true. If Jesse Marsh had stayed at Leeds, would they have stayed up?
I don't see any reason to believe they would have.
I think they sacked him too early. I was shocked when he went because, I mean, he wasn't one of the next managers on my list. I thought, no. I thought things were going quite well. They were last season anyway. And then all of a sudden it was going wrong quickly. And they did what we didn't do. They got rid of their manager straight away.
Well, let's put it this way. I don't think Jesse Marsh was the problem, but I'm not sure that he was the solution either. But there was no solution. In the end, it didn't matter. And frankly, that's kind of where I was with Southampton, is once you pulled the plug on Ralph, it didn't matter who you brought in. They were going to get relegated anyway.
Pep.
Then we had these, you know, these crazy, oh, why don't we bring back Pochettino? Like, he's not doing anything. Sure. That's what he wants.
Yeah. A relegated club on his resume, yeah. But then, obviously, Ruben Saez, he comes in. We scrape a win against Sheffield Wednesday in the Cup. He gets the job full-time. Not exactly what we wanted. Well, not exactly what. Well, I can only talk for me and Kevin here because we were saying, you know, off air, this is a big mistake. They've got time still. They need to bring in a manager now and not give it to Saez. And I think Tim was one of the ones that said we might as well just keep him. But I do believe, in spite of what you're saying, Scott, I do believe that if we had had a manager at that point, then we may have stayed up.
I thought Saez was probably our best chance, believe it or not, because I thought that one of the problems, see, again, it all gets back to the beginning of the season. If we had decided to go, and I wouldn't have, but if we had decided in the summer to go a different direction, then perhaps we could have brought in a manager who would have brought his system, maybe brought in some players to fit that system, and perhaps things could have been marginally better. But we didn't. We went with Ralph, and we started talking about how great consistency can be. And we had that with Ralph. We had the alignment throughout the organization. And then we pulled the plug midstream, and the result was a calamity. And after Nathan Jones, I thought maybe the best chance we have is to go back to the system that we started with, that we brought for which we brought players, and maybe there's a way to get things back on the rails. Then he comes in and we manage the win over Chelsea. I think there's a theme here. Yeah, then later, Leicester. But I think the win over Chelsea was when they gave him the job for the rest of the season.
Yeah, sorry, I said Sheffield Wednesday, didn't I? Sheffield Wednesday was when he was in between
yes.
Ralph and Nathan Jones. Apologies. Yeah, it was the Chelsea game. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and then after the Chelsea match, I looked at it as, look, do I think Seis is the guy to keep us up? Gun to my head? No, I think we're probably getting relegated anyway, but we don't really have another choice. I was never one who believed, oh, just bring in Big Sam and he'll take care of everything. Like, that doesn't work. That's just kind of some mythical belief that you can bring in these magical managers with 7 matches to go in the season and they'll find a way somehow.
But it didn't work, did it? It was.
Yeah. I mean, there were multiple ways that we could fail. And I don't think there was really a good plan for staying up, because there was no way to get a striker. There was no way to solve that problem. And so we ended right where we began, which is we don't really have anybody who can be a clinical finisher. And I think that you could point to a number of things, a number of ways that the roster was poor at the end of last campaign, back in 21-22, and throughout the season, you could make arguments that the roster was even poorer in 22-23. But I think that's really the reason why we went down, and not the managerial decisions or the time, other than Ralph.
Not necessarily poorer. I'd just say a little bit more undercooked. Just not as prepared.
Well, it's interesting you put it in those terms, because I think that was also. I heard the frustration from fans when it seemed like every match for the last, I don't know, 15, 20 matches, everyone was saying, we don't have time to build something now. We need results today. Like, we have to go out there and find a way, housery, whatever it's going to take. We have to get a result. And that's a lot easier said than done. And so we didn't want to have – we didn't have patience for a manager to find himself. We didn't have patience. And now I think, looking back on it, we can understand why. Like, we were frustrated that we look at the team sheet and say, my God, like, he keeps moving players around.
No striker.
Like, we don't
no
have
striker.
A set. Yeah. It's like, well, yeah. I'd hear that weekend, oh, there's no striker in the team sheet.
Who would you suggest? Yeah, Mara, Onuachu, or an injured Che Adams, and they none of them were top candidates. I mean, Onuachu wasn't
Orsic.
Playing his way in. Yeah, play Orsic for the centre. Yeah, why not? I mean, Walcott was playing up there. Alcaraz was playing up there.
I mean, let's think about this. There was a point in the season where I think all of us were saying, "Oh yeah, we have to play Theo. Theo looks like our best option." Last season, when the plane was flying into the mountain, we were all saying Theo should be nowhere near the pitch. We have better options. And I love Theo, and God bless him for working hard to get back in the team and not just being downcast. But did Theo Walcott become the best option because Theo Walcott became a better player in 22-23? Or was it that roster got so much worse that we just had no other options? And so I thought it was kind of farcical that the fans were always crying out for this player, that player. It reminded me of, you know, to bore the listeners back to an American football analogy, but there's the saying that the most popular player on an American football team is the backup quarterback. We just always assume that if you put him in, that this disaster that just took place wouldn't have taken place. So we all cried out for Tall Paul. Why we spent all this money on a striker, let him play. And as soon as he was on the pitch, we're screaming to get him off.
Yeah. But again, they spent money on him. They must have done some research on him, right?
Yeah, it was probably the same one who researched Joe Aribo.
Yeah. Guido Carrillo. Yeah, go back to that. Yes. That far, but yeah. I think it was Stu Minchin we had on. We were talking about positives. He brought up a really, really good point, and it made me see it from a different point of view. So, I mean, most people are going to say, oh, the positives of this season, you've got to look at Alcaraz, you've got to look at Lavia. But in fact, he said it could be the fact that we got relegated because we have a chance to rebuild now. we can hit the reset button, we can bring in a new manager, we can bring in and, you know, get rid of the, because I mean, a lot of the problems that Ruben Sayers had was that he's got too many players and he can't play them all. We saw so many players just not getting included in the match day squads. This is the chance to get rid of some of those players. And that made me see it. I mean, Stu was so positive. Yeah, he was very, very positive, saying that we were going to win the league and go back up again. Obviously, the positive from being relegated, having a chance to reset, it's in his mind that this is what's best for the club right now. And I think he does have a point. If you're looking at this relegation, this is something to be positive about. It is a chance to reset, rebuild.
Well, look, we don't have a choice but to look at it as a positive, I suppose. It's hard for me to say that relegation is ever a positive. I think we have to be very careful with that, though, because as I was saying before about how fans were crying out for consistency, you know, one of the things that used to drive us nuts, we would all complain about Nathan Redmond. Oh, he's inconsistent. He's great one match, and then he doesn't show up for the next two. At least he showed up for that one match, because we put players out there who didn't show up for any matches, who brought next to nothing. And I think we can, as a fan, you want to be positive, and you can look at it as we have all these, you know, voids to fill, and now we're going to have money. You know, the upside of potentially, you know, if there is an upside of losing players like Tino that we really wanted to see, is we'll fetch a good amount of money that we can then use to fill in the voids. And look, there is cause for optimism. I mean, I have some optimism. Like, I actually am optimistic about our strikers going into next season. We have three proven championship level strikers in Nathan Tella, Adam Armstrong, and Shea Adams. And I don't frankly need three of them to set the world on fire. One or two, and we're in a great place. So there's some cause for optimism there. But I think that last season we were all too happy to see, you know, we always said we got to get rid of some of the dead wood. You know, we have to get rid of, you know, it'd be great to move on from Nathan Redmond and Shane Long. And I found
No Shane Long.
Yeah, we couldn't put Shane Long in there. I mean, he never scored a goal, right?
Oh, we love Shane Long.
I love Shane Long as well. But, you know, he didn't score. It was kind of undeniable. Mm. But we moved on from them. And what did we get in return? We got Alcaraz, which was nice. That, of course, that present didn't come until January. But other than that, I mean, I remember saying at one point in the season, we were so happy to watch all of these guys go. If we had them in the roster right now, would you not be starting Shane Long? Would you not be starting Nathan? I know Nathan Redmond would be starting. So, you know, things can get worse when you have those voids. But in terms of like the large squad, I like the idea of, let's see if Sam Adozie can do it. You know, now we get to give some of these players a chance. Who?
Dom Ballard.
I'd love to see that. I mean, isn't it amazing? Like, I had this realization that, wow, we just went from having, from my saying we have absolutely no striker, to it's actually crowded up there. Like, who are you going to put up there?
Yeah, assuming that he's going to play. We don't know if he's going to play Adam Armstrong through the center. By all accounts, Russell Martin only plays one up top. Looking at his formations with Swansea, he either plays five at the back, four at the back, and five in midfield. So he bangs that out. But I don't think there's going to be any room to play Adam Armstrong through the centre.
Actually, a really good problem to have. I mean, I think Tella's got to be on the pitch, right?
I don't see why not. Him coming off the right or the left. I mean, he's proven in that division. Had a great season last year for Burnley, but again, we don't know if he's going to stay. All these players could be out the door, so he might not have that many options. But
he's one that I think I'd rather take the player over the money. If Burnley wants to be foolish and not pony up the cash for him, that's fine. I'd love Nathan Tella banging in 20 goals. I'll take that.
That would be fantastic, wouldn't it? Okay, so we've got some questions. I've got six questions for you. The same questions that I ask every single person that comes on the show. The first one being, if Ralph had still been in charge, would we still be in the Premier League?
Yes. Ralph, ooh, I think, would have found a way. In fact, I actually think – so when you take into consideration that Ralph was sacked right before we hit a favorable part of the schedule, I think if you just looked at the next – the upcoming five matches, would Ralph have gotten – 5 points from those, 7, 8. I think that that's realistic. I think he would have ended the first half of the season on a point per game. And then he'd get Lavia back. And who knows what would have happened in January. I think you give him that roster, yeah, I think I have every reason to believe that he would have been able to keep the team up, especially when it was a season when you only needed, like, what, 35, 36 points to stay up.
Yeah. It's amazing how that question splits opinions. Your player of the season.
Man, I listening to the previous episodes, I thought it's Lavia by a long shot. And then Tim last week made a great case for Ward-Prowse.
Both teams did, actually, yeah.
Yeah, I think I still lean Lavia, especially because what I described earlier at the beginning of the season, when he wasn't on the pitch, the team was a lot worse. You noticed when he was out there. So yeah. I love James Ward-Prowse, but I think I'd give it to Lavia, but it was a lot closer than I initially thought.
Yeah. And I suppose it was the shock of him being so good so soon, which is another thing that, you know, it catches the eye. So yeah, he gets it. He was
so poised. I mean, from the moment he was on the pitch, I felt like every time I watched him, the ball was on his foot and he was spinning away from two players in a dangerous area. And he was doing it like it was nothing. Like he had no fear that this ball was going to be taken.
Like he's been doing it for years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Natural. Goal of the season.
I have to go with Shea's scissor kick against Leicester. It was... because it was a number of things. It was late in the match. It was the winning goal. And it was at a time when I still had optimism. And I was so thrilled because I was pulling for Ralph. And when once that went in, I thought, great, now we can finally put to rest all of this madness about sacking Ralph. We can settle in. And maybe Shea is going to be something closer to that clinical striker that we need. But that was just such a thrilling goal. Like it was one of the last times Southampton made me really, really happy.
That was at the start of the season as well.
Yes, it was.
Oh God. Yeah. What was your game of the season?
I'm going to go a little off the board and I'm going to go with the Tottenham 3-3 draw because I was so down, like I was just crushed watching it. When Tottenham got the third, I was like, this might be one of those rare times where if I was at the stadium, I'd be walking out right now. There is no reason to, there's no way this team is coming up with two or three goals from this point onward. I'm back to looking like relegation. And then out of nowhere, they managed to come back, pull even, and everything that followed was tremendous. I mean, we've got 10 matches to go. We're 2 points adrift. I have cause for optimism. Maybe the Sayas guy is going to work out. what I do know is that Conte at Tottenham is not.
Yes.
He flipped out. Can't watch that enough. No. So, yeah, for me, that just came out of nowhere, and suddenly I had some optimism again that I had been crying out for, and then we know what happened from there.
Biggest failure of the season. There is a lot of them. Which is the main one?
It's really tough. I think I'm going to go with Sport Republic having no plan B at striker.
Alex Haas said the same thing. Pretty much.
Yeah, it's really close. It's between that and sacking Ralph at all. The only thing about Ralph that gives me a little pause is I don't actually know that Ralph would have pulled the team out of the tailspin. But whereas I know that not having a striker was
a good point.
It was, and it's unforgivable. It's just so unforgivable when you think about the money that Sport Republic was throwing around that they couldn't find a backup. It just infuriates me to even think about it now. So I think that's the biggest one.
Yeah, very good point. This is the best one. I love this because I'm going to write this down, and I'll remind you at the end of the season. We've got some interesting ones in here so far. But what position do Saints finish in the Championship, Scott? I know it's difficult. I know it's early. We haven't got players in. We haven't got players. I mean, it might even change between now and August, but because mine probably will. But for right now is when I'm going to log it.
So it is very challenging because I feel like there's just a bunch of question marks all over the pitch because a lot of our better players are going to go. And now I'm counting on Sport Republic to fill these voids. And they've been their track record is spotty. It's not as bad as I think some people make out because, you know, Lavia did happen and so did Alcaraz. And I think some of the swings and misses in January was because they were desperate. It all dates back to screwing it up in the summer window, but it brought in some other players. I mean, Mara's got potential. Dozy's got potential. But I think I would say it's hard for me to say with certainty that they're going to get it right. But I could see us finishing in about sixth place, I think.
I knew you were going to say that for some reason.
I think, and being optimistic, I see it as maybe we're going to have a little bit of trouble out of the gates. We've got a whole new cast of characters in here. It might take a little while for the system to take hold and the players to gel. But I could see us finishing strong, finishing in sixth, and then coming through the playoff.
That's good. I'm going to take that. I'll put that down. You are locked in, my friend. Sixth place.
I wanted to say that I thought the biggest success of the season was actually the Jan Bednarek reclamation project.
Yeah, that's worth mentioning, I suppose, because I mean he turned some heads there. What he said, I still cannot forgive him for what he said. You can't do that. But the way that he turned it around with his performances, yeah.
He showed a lot of heart.
He certainly did, yeah. And I'd welcome him back to the team. But still, there is that little bit of doubt there that says, you know, he doesn't want to be here.
He did. He showed a lot of heart. And it was, I mean, when at the time that he was leaving for Villa, he was candid about some of the issues that he was having, like the difficulty of dealing with all the pressure, fans getting on him and so forth. And I thought, man, you show that kind of vulnerability and then you leave to go to Villa, and then you have to come back. That's really, really tough for him to turn around. And so I was thrilled to, like yourself, I think, I was a little reluctant to be rooting for this guy, kind of wished that we didn't have to. But when he came back and he's playing, he was clearly playing hurt on a couple of occasions. He gave it his all, and he was pretty darn productive. I mean, there were times where I think probably had more confidence in him than anyone else back there, and might have to give Sayas a little credit for that too, because it was really under his leadership that I think Bednarek really solidified himself back there.
Yeah, he was. You say he was playing with injuries. Yeah, that was the time when we thought he'd break his rib, and he still, you know, he could hardly breathe, but he was back on the pitch, and yeah, that's amazing. And you don't get that a lot, especially in Premier League. Yeah, well said. Yeah, hopefully he can stay because he could be a really, really important piece for us next season.
I hope so. Him and the anchor, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, I think he's gone.
Sadly.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah. Scott, thank you. Obrigado.
Thank you, Ray. This has been so much fun.
Come on for your hat trick.
Absolutely.
And then I'll remind you when we're like 16th in the championship, and I'll say, Scott, you said we were going to finish sixth. Come on. What's going on?
I could see that coming.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And make sure you keep active on the Discord, and you know, next season get on your predictions and stuff like that. And
absolutely will be.
Thanks a million, mate. And up the Saints.
Up the Saints.
Up the Saints.
Up at Southampton.
Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.